This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is heading to Russia for a summit with President Vladimir Putin. Dmitry Trinin, director of the Carnegie Moscow Center, says Putin will use the summit to elevate his influence on Korean matters.
Russia wants to essentially send a message, not just to Washington and to a degree to Beijing, but also to Seoul, that it is an important player and Russia should be factored in when Korean issues are discussed.
A Kremlin advisor told Russian news services that the Kim-Putin summit on Thursday will focus on North Korea's nuclear program. Kim's Russia trip comes about 2 months after his high-stakes nuclear summit with President Trump, ending without an agreement because of disputes over U.S.-led sanctions on the North. Sri Lankan Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe said the suicide bombings that devastated the country on Easter Sunday could have links to Islamic State, which has claimed responsibility. Another official indicated the bombings were in retaliation for last month's deadly attacks on mosques in New Zealand. On Tuesday, Sri Lanka observed the National Day of Mourning as the death toll climbed to 321. The explosions ripped through four hotels and three prominent churches, targeting tourists and Christian worshippers. As the Sri Lankan government faces questions about a massive security failure in preventing the bombings, the Prime Minister confirmed there was specific intelligence about the attacks from India. For more news, as always, join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The Supreme Court's conservative majority seems ready to uphold a Trump administration plan to ask every U.S. resident about their citizenship during next year's census, despite evidence that could leave millions of Hispanic and immigrants uncounted. AP correspondent Sagar Morghani reports from the White House.
Three lower courts have blocked the plan, saying it would discourage many from being counted. But the court's five conservative members do not appear to share the concern, and its liberal justices don't have the votes to stop the plan. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney says the census must be accurate because it affects how many seats states have in the House and their share of federal funding.
So if you're not counted, you're not represented.
White House spokesman Hogan Gidley says President Trump is behind the citizenship question.
He wants to know who's in this country.
His latest appointee, Brett Kavanaugh, says if Congress is so worried about the count being accurate, it could ban the citizenship question from being asked. Sagar Morghani at the White House.
The former head of a U.S. drug distributor has been indicted on what federal prosecutors say are the first criminal charges against a drug company executive to stem from the opioid crisis. The former Rochester Drug Cooperative CEO, Lawrence Dowd, allegedly ordered subordinates to ignore warnings about certain pharmacy customers to maximize company revenues and his own pay, as the company's sales of drugs like OxyContin and fentanyl soared. Dowd's lawyer says the government is being used by others who are hiding their wrongdoings by accusing his client of criminal activity.
Mr. Dowd will not serve as their scapegoat. He fully intends to fight this with his last breath. He will, at the end of the day, after everything is learned about the truth, the facts, Mr. Dowd will be vindicated.
Prosecutors say Dowd and other top executives deliberately decided not to investigate, monitor, or alert federal regulators about pharmacy customers they knew were providing opioids to people who wanted them for non-medical uses. Police in the northwestern Pakistan area arrested a man and are hunting down his suspected associates for spreading unfounded rumors through fake social media video that a polio vaccine led to fainting and vomiting. The man in custody, who teaches at a private school near Peshawar City, is seen on the video instructing his students to faint and pretend to be sick from the oral polio vaccine. World Health Organization says Peshawar is the most stubborn hotbed for the polio virus. The three-day national vaccination campaign ends on Wednesday. For more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union says Sudan's Transitional Military Council has 3 months to make democratic reforms.
Well, it's possible because Africa is bound by tradition and I think by their own constitution to exact some kind of punishment when a coup takes place. But generally, 3 months is not a very long time.
Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now political party in Sudan. There are reports Malawi's government wants to restrict Nigerians and Russians entering the country ahead of the May 21st elections. Cameroon's former opposition leader says separatists kidnapped his brother and 2 employees. But the separatists have denied the allegations, and results are in from Egypt's constitutional referendum.
And Musharakat Adad, 27 million.
He says 88% of those who cast valid ballots approve the constitutional changes.
That's correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo. 2 Malayan journalists were not granted U.S. visas in a timely manner. We will tell you the impact. And Kenyan teachers begin training today for a new curriculum. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union says Sudan's Transitional Military Council has 3 months to implement democratic reforms as protesters on Tuesday increased their call for the military to give way to a civilian governing council following the April 11 ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. The decision came at the end of an AU summit in Egypt's capital, Cairo. The African Union had threatened to suspend Sudan's membership if the military council failed to hand over power to civilians. Ghazi Atabani, leader of the Reform Now political party in Sudan, says he believes the protesters will accept the 3 months.
Well, it's possible. Because Africa is bound by tradition and I think by their own constitution to exact some kind of punishment when a coup takes place. But generally, 3 months is not a very long time.
The chairman of the commission, Musa Faki Mohamed, was in Khartoum. Did he meet with you, the civilians?
Yes, he did. Actually, in my case, he did because we knew each other. We worked together. He was Minister of Foreign Affairs in charge when I was handling the Darfur dossier. So we met quite frequently. And when he arrived in Khartoum and we discussed the issues, and I also did my best to keep him up to date on the situation in Sudan and also propose some steps to be taken.
Dr. Ghazi, your party, the Reform Now Party, seemed to be heavily involved in the negotiations between the Transitional Military Council and the protesters. So, do you trust the military?
I do. Generally, the Sudanese public here trusts the military more than it trusts the politicians. But because of the 30 years of Bashir's rule, this has started to change, but it hasn't changed completely. When you find a military person who has no intention of making a coup, but was brought to helm of power by a coup, you know, trust them because they didn't have a coup in their plan in the first place. So I think I trust them.
Let's assume the 3 months that the African Union is asking for have come to an end. What would you like to see in Sudan at the end of the 3 months?
Our strategic goal is to have elections as soon as possible in the next 2 years. We'd like to have credible elections under which we can operate as political parties and practice normal politics. So we would like the military council to supervise and make sure that the steps taken to reach that point, the end of 2 years, according to international terms, criteria, I mean, for a credible election.
Dr. Ghazi, thank you very much. We are always happy to talk with you.
Thank you.
Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now political party in Sudan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Egypt's National Electoral Commission says the country's 3-day referendum approved changes to the constitution that would extend presidential terms from 4 to 6 years and allow incumbent president Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to run for office once more when his current term ends in 2024. The commission indicated that 44% of Egypt's 62 million registered voters cast votes. Edward Urania reports from Cairo.
The audience clapped in approval as Egypt's National Electoral Commission head, Judge Lachine Ibrahim Suleiman Lachine, read the results of the country's three-day constitutional referendum, which amended the constitution to extend President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's current term from 4 to 6 years and to allow him to run again in 2024. A large percentage of voters approved the constitution changes, according to Judge
Lachine.
He says the 27 million voters out of 62 million eligible voters turned out to vote, or 44% of those eligible voters. 88% of those who cast valid ballots, he stresses, approved the constitutional changes. The judge saluted Egypt's body politic, thanking those who turned out to vote, including the country's women and people with special needs. He also stressed that democracy must be built from within the country and not imposed by forces from abroad. Judge Lachine noted that the constitutional changes will allow certain sectors of society, including women, Christians, and farmers, among others, stronger representation in parliament, which will now be expanded to an upper and a lower chamber. Each of Egypt's five presidents since the fall of the monarchy in 1952 has held at least one referendum. The most recent referendum took place during the brief term of former Islamist President Mohamed Morsi, who was ousted by the military during a popular revolt in 2013. Opponents of the constitutional changes complained about their inability to mobilize voters to support their cause, while opponents of the government based outside the country, including the now outlawed Muslim Brotherhood, termed the referendum null and void. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Sahelian.com, an independent news site based in Mali that just released a documentary with insightful footage about the security crisis in Mali, has had to cancel its U.S.-based events after two of its journalists, one from Mali and another from Niger, were not granted visas in a timely manner. The journalists were subjected to an extreme vetting rule under the Muslim ban, thus forcing them to cancel screening events for the documentary in New York City and Washington, D.C. Joseph Penny, the co-founder of the Sahelian.com, spoke to Ricky Stryak about how what he calls the Islamophobic policy is hurting valuable discussions about security in the Sahel.
We at Sahelian.com, for the past 8 months, we've been producing a documentary film called The Forgotten Ones. It takes place in Mopti region of Mali, and we follow one of our journalists named Sori Kondo as he tries to get back to his village of Kouakourou, which has been occupied by jihadists for some time now. And so in that documentary, we get a local insight into what's really going on in Mopti region. We speak to all different types of people. We get a lot of different testimonies about what's happened to them, what's happened to their families. And it really gives some strong insight into the roots of this conflict, which has basically become the epicenter of the security crisis in Mali and maybe, say, the broader Sahel.
And as I understand it, two of the journalists involved in that, one from Niger, one from Mali, were invited to come to the U.S. to speak about the making and the information they had found. And they were not granted visas in time. Is that correct?
Yeah, so two of the journalists from Sahelian, we invited them to New York and D.C. Their visa applications were fine. But then they were then subjected to a form called DS-5535, which is part of the executive order that established the Muslim ban, which is sort of an arbitrary look into family history, social media history, employment history, work, and travel over the last 15 years, none of which can really be verified in Washington. It's mostly in country that it can be verified. So their process, their visa process has been held up, and there's no time frame for this process to be finished. So we had to cancel the event.
How many issues does this raise? First of all, the U.S. is present in these countries, quote unquote, fighting terror. They are building a base, a drone base in Niger.
We think it's outrageous. This is, again, a process that was established by Trump under the Muslim ban, right? So the fact that Muslim journalists are being targeted, black Muslim journalists are being targeted, we consider this both racist and Islamophobic. Because there aren't similar cases, really, of white European journalists being held to the same process. So we consider this to be not only a shame for the audience that was going to be attending these events and the American public that would have heard from these voices, which are so needed in policy debates, but also for American efforts to establish and help security in the Sahel region.
That was Joseph Penning, co-founder of Sahelian.com. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York City. Today's Wednesday, April 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The founder and until recently chairman of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party says separatists fighting for an independent Anglophone Cameroon have abducted his junior brother and two of his employees. Ni John Frundi says he refused the separatist demand for money.
My junior brother, who had been abducted before by the time they burnt my compound in the village, was abducted again with my two workers in the ranch. And between January and now, I've lost over 100 animals. The unfortunate thing in Cameroon now is that the Anglophone cause has been infiltrated by armed robbers. Some of these groups are put in place by senior officials of Mr. Biya's government. So they have parallel groups fighting.
But Mr. Frundi, you are one of the senior politicians in the Anglophone region. Why do you think the what you call rebels will be targeting you?
Well, they think that I should sell my compound, give them money. I should sell all my cows, give them money. They've stolen the cows. They've done everything. They burned the compound. And they're now after my family members. Nothing will make me budge.
Do you support the ideology of the secessionists, that is independent Ambazonia?
I still believe in the cause. I still believe that Anglophones in Cameroon are marginalized. I still believe that Anglophones have a problem. And any true Anglophone who has this belief, we stand together. But to think that people should be punished, children should not go to school, in villages, women cannot go to the farm, Anglophones have been marginalized, maltreated, and taken for granted in Cameroon. They have a problem. But Mr. Biya wants to play over this to say that Cameroonians have no problem.
Back to the abduction of your family members. Would you be willing to pay the ransom?
I will not pay a franc. And the gentleman who abducted my brother told me that, Mr. Frundi, that noise you are making, you might never see your brother again. I say, I know where people are. If I don't see my brother, I'll get to the bush myself, and we kill ourselves. Because I don't think that when I started with politics in 1990, I ever held anybody hostage to give me money. But this that children have taken upon themselves, firing guns in the air, and this air shooting frightened the local people, not the army. And the thing is getting worse that some of them are procuring very good guns. And there's heavy casualty on both sides. And I find myself in the center. What do I do? So the situation is very unpredictable as at now.
Mr. Frundi, thank you very much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
God bless you, James, and I hope to hear from you soon.
Ni John Frundi is the founder and former chairman of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. He was speaking with me from Bamenda. Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon, says Ambazonian forces were not trained to abduct, kidnap, or take ransom from civilians in Ambazonia. He says it is the Cameroonian military that are arresting civilians in Anglophone Cameroon or Ambazonia.
Ambazonian restoration forces have not been trained to abduct or kidnap or take ransom from any civilian on the ground in Ambazonia. What I would say to you is there are forces on the ground in Ambazonia. In fact, the invading French Cameroon terrorist army in Ambazonia goes around in civilian attire. They shoot to kill. They arrest individuals. And I wouldn't be surprised if these abductions that Frundi is referring to were conducted by French Cameroon forces. It will also interest you to know that the Minister of Territorial Administration and Decentralization, Paul Atangangi, of French Cameroon, the government delegate to the Bamenda Urban Council, the mayor of Boya Council, and other individuals who are loyal to the French Cameroon regime, they have also recruited and equipped fighters on the ground to harass and intimidate and bully, abduct, and take ransoms from Ambazonians. And you may ask, what is the reason for that? The reason for that is to demoralize our people to surrender and give up on resisting the war they declared on us.
Chris, then what about the other news that came to us about the children of one Mrs. Esther Oman being abducted? The allegation is that these abductions are taking place whenever people do not support the movement.
That is not true. People do not support the movement from ground zero. The movement is supported from the diaspora. Tell me, how do you pick up kids and expect kids to support the movement? No, it doesn't happen. Support for the movement comes from the diaspora. Whoever has abducted those children, I can assure you, those are French Cameroon terrorist soldiers and our Ambazonian restoration fighters. They are not in the character of picking up children for any reason.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. It's a little over 3 weeks before Malawians go to the polls on May 21st to elect their next president. Incumbent President Peter Mutharika, who is seeking re-election, is being challenged by at least 8 candidates, including current Vice President Solos Chilima of the United Transformation Movement, UTM Party. The Yansa Times newspaper reported Tuesday that the government has ordered immigration officers to double-screen Russian and Nigerian visitors to Malawi for fear they may be helping the UTM party. But Patricia Kaliati, the Secretary General of the UTM, says the allegations indicate the ruling party is panicking.
Let me tell you, as UTM, we are not connected to all the embassies. The embassies are in the hands of government. So when they're talking about all these countries which they're talking about, it's very pathetic. But also the immigration is being controlled by them. And it's really very pathetic to see a government in power fearing of unknown, or also trying to smear or to blackmail people. We will not tolerate, we in UTM, to see that people are blackmailing us. And I think if they're talking about their own shadow, we are able to tell that they are now panicking and they've seen that they are losing now ground. They don't have even chances of taking this government again. Let me tell you, we in UTM, we don't have any connection with anybody else.
But, madam, so the UTM and Vice President Chilima, are you satisfied that these elections will take place in a free and fair manner?
What we are looking forward is to have these elections in a free and fair manner. But if now government is stopping all this, now we are smelling a rat now. That is, the whole government, which was supposed to look into the fair and free elections, the ones who are supposed to be managing all the activities of what the Electoral Commission is doing, making sure that the ground is for everybody. Now they come and talk about this. It means they don't have ideas. They don't have things to sell. And they are proving to the Malawians that they failed. And it's really very pathetic for a president. Hey, my brother. You know, this is an odd hour for us in Malawi, but it's really very pathetic for the whole president announcing to the world, and yet he's in charge of government. That's why we are saying we are going to take that seat, because the driver who is driving the vehicle doesn't know what to do, and is going to dump us in the mud. 54 years of our independence, you cannot be in this situation. That's why we are saying we should have Dr. Sausima to govern this nation. He's the one who knows the challenges which Malawians are going through.
It's less than a month before Malawians go to the polls. How is the vice president and the UTM? How are you doing in the campaign?
Just hold your neck so that you join us when Dr. Salzman will be swearing in come 23rd of May. You know, when people are talking things like this, just know that they've failed. They're failing to swallow their pride to say, Dr. Salzman, go ahead. So the campaign, Dr. Salzman is faring very, very well, very well. And is having good manifestos, is able to articulate the manifestos which are touching the hearts of Malawians.
Madam Kaliyati, thank you very much again. We're always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Just buy your suit as you are preparing to come and join Dr. Salzman's swearing. Thanks so much.
Patricia Kaliyati is the Secretary General of the United Transformation Movement Party of Malawi, who is speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The government of Kenya has rolled out a four-day training for more than 100,000 teachers who will start teaching using the new curriculum of 2633 in all public schools. This after the teachers' union and the government failed to agree on how to roll out the curriculum. The teachers said they were not ready for the rollout. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the Kenya National Union of Teachers has vowed not to have any teachers trained.
After a long tussle between the government and the teachers' union on whether to roll out the Kenya's new education curriculum, the government has officially begun the training yesterday, Tuesday, as teachers' unions still insist the teachers are not ready for it. Kenya's Education Cabinet Secretary George Magoha, speaking during the official opening of the teachers' training on the 2633 curriculum that will phase out the 844, said that by September of this year, 2019, the possible steps will have been taken, ready to roll out, and that threats by teachers' union will not be a hindrance.
What we are doing now with regard to training the teachers is to ensure that the process continues smoothly. So we are not going to waste time talking about issues that are not important to the core strategy and tactics which will lead us to the operationalization of this program.
The curriculum will see schoolgoers studying 2 years in kindergarten, 6 years in primary school, 6 years in high school, and 3 years in higher learning institutions. However, the Kenya National Union of Teachers Secretary General Wilson Sisyon insists that no school head should roll out the new curriculum, claiming that the teachers are not ready and that members of the public were not involved during the decision-making.
There will be no meaningful results out of this training. So why attend trainings that does not make sense and trainings that waste taxpayers' money? From this point on, teachers should avoid any activity of CBC, whether it is training or even whether it is teaching during the school term, until the whole process is sanitized through a proper process of public participation.
Sosion's intimidations to the government, however, have fallen on a deaf ear as the education ministry insists that no threat will stop them from rolling out the new curriculum. Mr. Magoha says the rollout was supposed to begin in January, but delayed and must be implemented immediately.
The CBC train has already left the station. It left the station in January, and in my life, I never have a reverse gear. So we are going to move with it. If you have ideas to give us that are rational and reasonable, we shall take them and incorporate them.
The current curriculum in Kenya has been applied since 1985, and it involved students studying 8 years in primary school, 4 years in high school, and 4 years in universities. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, Somali officials say a senior Al-Shabaab official has defected from the group and surrendered to the Somali government in the southwestern Gedo region. And that is it for this Wednesday, April 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee it.
African Beats. Hello, sports fans. This is the voice of America's Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the Sunny Side of Sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute edition of the show at 17:30 UTC, right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.